Hello and welcome to episode 16 of When the Flames Go Up, the ATFC podcast with me, Will Brown. We've got German Julian on the pod tonight to discuss the York City away match and look ahead to Solihull Moors at home in the National League. We've also got Julian, who was, as he's South Wales based, was down at Llanelli Town for Wales C against England C. So we'll get some insight from there. And then, all that's left to kind of mention is the listener emails we've got in. Obviously, we asked, I kind of went through where our listeners were from. I got a quick email back from my dad, Bill Brown. He said, he just simply said Thailand. No subject line either. Loves it. And then we also had one from Chris, who says, I've listened to the latest episode. I thought I'd get in touch to say I'm your listener, maybe one of several, in Australia. And then he goes on to say that he'd happily get on at some point to do an episode on far-flung fans that I mentioned as well. And he grew up near Aldershot, but moved to Melbourne about 15 years ago. So we'll hopefully get Chris on at some point to discuss how he kind of supports the shots from afar. He also mentions, when we're talking about obscure shots players, he says, when we were selling our flat, the estate agent gave us the details of interested parties with first names only for privacy. One of them was called Wesley. My first thought was, I wonder if it's in Gobehang. I mean, Chris, that is what all of us think when we hear the name Wesley. Chris goes on to say, strangely, he's a player that I think I saw all of his appearance for us. Being long distance, I tend to have brief bursts of seeing 3 to 4 consecutive games when I come back every couple of years. So I've actually seen more of him playing for us live than I have Toladge or Stokes. Oh, Chris, how times have changed. So thank you very much, Chris, for getting involved. Anyone else wants to tell us where you're from and, you know, we can get you on the pod at some point. We'll try and go fully continental. That's Australia and Southeast Asia. So let's scratch another bit of the map off with wherever you're listening from, even if it's on holiday. Great. That's enough of me. Hopefully the audio is a bit better this week because my cold has subsided. We're all good. Enjoy the episode and just enjoy the episode. Right. So let's start with the York City away match from Saturday. I said in an email to the guys when I emailed out to see if anyone was free that it was a kind of inevitable 1-0 defeat. I think no one had predicted it, but I think the nagging thought in our brain might have been that a 1-0 defeat was incoming. And we could have predicted it would have been Lionel John Lewis in the 90th minute to do it. He equalized back in August in the home game in the 92nd minute to equalize there. So another sting in the tail for the man named like a shop. Let's start. I'm going to come to you first, Joe, because I think you were the only one that watched it, I believe. I was on radio duty in bed, recovering from my cold. What did you think of the performance and the result?
Yeah, I was able to watch it. Obviously, I wasn't able to get up there, but I had pretty good stream of the match. So I had a good view of the events that unfolded. It was one of the first things I wrote down on my views of the match was I've never seen a striker for an opposition team get into so many good positions but fluff his lines. Dipo Akinyemi he seemed to sort of get himself in a position where if he took the right touch, he could have scored 4 or 5, but he kept getting himself in those positions and then just looking like he never seen a goal before. So that was quite amusing. And I think had they had one of our sort of Tollage or Stokes in those positions, they could have been 5-0 up by half time. But it was an odd game. I think we found York quite hard to break down. And I think they were a team that had come off the back of a 6-1 defeat. And I think, I'm not saying we expected to win, but we probably expected to have more clear-cut chances. But they seem to have really made it hard for our wide players to get into the game, which meant we then sat a bit deeper and struggled to create those chances that we normally do, which is quite rare for us this season to not have that many chances on goal. Although we did have a really great one at the very end of the game, and it should have been 1-1, but I'll come to that. I noted that, first half, few efforts from York, good position for Akinyemi, nothing really to write home about in the first half. But from our perspective, it looked like there's just a little bit of a disconnect between our defence and attack. I mean, it was a defence that haven't really played together. That combination hasn't played together that much, that often. I don't think Rowe was fully fit. He didn't look it. And I don't think he would be fully fit. He's not been starting recently. So I think it took him a while to get up to speed, and he had quite a lot of defensive work to do. Second half, we sort of, again, didn't come out the traps. We had really poor back pass from Kadji that should have led to them being 1-0 up. But we were lucky a foul was given on their centre-back, really, so that they didn't score. I don't think it was a foul. We sort of... first proper chance for York was on about 68 minutes, when Jordy actually, I think, had to make his first proper save. We brought Kwame on. Didn't make quite the impact that he normally does. He again struggled to get into the game. One positive from our perspective, though, I thought when Josh Barrett came on, he looked really, really good. And I've seen a few other people commented on that on social media as well. He looked really lively. He's barely had a chance since he's been here, because when he did come, he come on for the first start, he came off injured. So it was nice to see him get a good 25 minutes, and he nearly scored probably the goal of the season. I don't know if you've seen the highlights, but spectacular bicycle kick and forced a good save. And then after that, Harfield made an absolutely fantastic, as we've seen so many times this season, absolutely fantastic last minute challenge. I thought that's going to get us the draw that we've probably just about deserved from a subpar performance. And then right at the end, the goal. I think it just took us by surprise. It's one of those sort of efforts that's really hard to save as it bounced towards the ground. And for a tall keeper like Jordy, it looks, I think, sometimes like he should be saving that. But actually, for a tall keeper, when it bounces just in front of you at an angle, those are really, really hard to save. So they look like they're going in slow motion almost, and it was just the inevitable. When we thought we might have just got a point from a bad performance, as you said at the start, John Lewis comes in and he does what he did in the home game, got a late goal, but we should have been 1-1. We had a clear chance at the end, and I think Glover will turn that over in his head over and over again. I think he was surprised that it had fallen to him, to be honest, and I think any clean connection, it's 1-1, but we'll allow him that. He's been absolutely fantastic. And I think, just a performance to forget. This team have been so brilliant this season, and this isn't the Premier League. They're not going to give 10 out of 10s every week. But I'll be honest, I thought York were just still really poor, to be honest. I think they'll go down, and I think that's probably why we were really disappointed to lose that game, because I think if every player had a 7 out of 10 performance, we would have won. They weren't a good side, and I think they were absolutely chuffed they managed to come out with the win, and were probably surprised that we didn't turn up as well as we normally do.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose I'll start on Widdrington. In his post-match, said it was two poor teams playing against each other, and it was quite a poor game. And from the highlights, you can kind of see the chances that are being given to each team are pretty poor. And then the goal at the end comes with Linnell John-Lewis free at the back post. I don't know who's meant to be marking him. Tyler Frost is looking two different ways, so I'm not sure who he was marking. I don't know if it was zonal, but he should not be free at the back post, having just come on. It was his first touch. Barrett's first effort, which is kind of a pullback to him, and he kind of just clips it basically in the top corner, and the keeper somehow tips it over. And then obviously the acrobatic effort that goes over. I thought that listening to it was going to be the one that, the one bit of magic to separate the two poor sides in the game, but unfortunately not. Joe, because I've not seen the Glover and is it Lati Fairweather challenge in the first 5 minutes, did you see that, and what were your thoughts on it?
Yes, I did actually miss that on my notes, so good point. It was, from the angle of the stream I had, It was on the far side of the pitch. I think it's one of those ones because both players were moving so quickly and the coming together happened so fast. The impact of the challenge, I think it was probably a yellow. I think when you give reds for that, I think it sort of kills the game a bit. I don't think it was a malicious challenge. I think it was potentially dangerous if he's really mistimed it, but I think just because of the speed it happened, I don't think it was terribly mistimed. I think it just about warranted the yellow. But if we had the angle from the other side, which we haven't got the privilege of, it may well have been a lot worse. But it didn't look like our bench made a massive deal of it at the time. But perhaps that's because they can't afford any more yellow cards.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, it did sound kind of. I think there was split opinion on the commentary on whether it was a yellow or a red as well. So I'm not sure. I think being that far away as well, it was probably hard to judge. Grant, thank you for that. And I'll come to you next, Julian. How did you feel we performed? I presume you've watched the highlights and yeah, the result in general.
Yeah, thanks, Will. I thought it was really good roundup from Joe. Can't really add too much to that. I think in Tommy's interview, he actually talked of three poor teams. He mentioned us, them, and a certain person in the middle with a sort of black T-shirt on. I think he was pretty annoyed with the whole day, really, and definitely one to move on from. When we started, I actually felt really quite confident. I think from memory, Stuart O'Keefe had a chance in the opening couple of minutes, which, you know, by all accounts was a really good save from the York goalie. And he was a changing goal, obviously, after they'd shipped in six goals. They brought a new goalie in. So I thought, you know, great opportunity to test the goalie, put him under a bit of pressure. But with our luck, he produced a worldy save and by all accounts had a really good game. So, you know, fair play to him for stepping up and having that sort of game. I think a few corners were going through quite early on, so I was quite confident at the start. And then it just started to sort of drift away. And I got that feeling by half time that we were pretty happy to be going in level. And then I had a weird thought, which doesn't happen very often, but I thought, I wonder if it's going to be one of those games where, you know, we get away with a 1 or 2 nil victory from playing pretty poorly, because it doesn't happen very often for the Shots, does it? Normally when we play poorly, we get absolutely thumped. But I just wondered if it was going to be one of those days. And so I was sitting there at halftime thinking, yeah, this is going to go our way. And kickoff came and it seemed to just get even worse. So, you know, after about 60 minutes or so, I was thinking we just need to hang in there, take a point, thank you very much, and leave. And it did feel like that was going to happen. And when I saw that Lionel John Lewis had come on at the end, I just, again, you could read the script, really. You just knew he was going to score. And that's obviously what happened. So, yeah, it sort of ruined the weekend, like I'm sure it did for most. But, you know, I was quickly getting my head around the game for this Saturday. And, you know, I've pretty much, as far as you can, forgotten the result now and really looking forward to the next game.
Yeah, I guess the only thing to come out of it, but I feel for the, in the kind of lineup side of things, was obviously did we lose Kobe Rowe halfway through the game? Did he have to come off again?
Yeah, he did come off, yeah, and I think perhaps he wasn't fit, and or perhaps carrying a, still not fully recovered from an injury perhaps, but yeah, when he came off, I actually think we played a little bit better, because Kadji dropped into centre back and actually fitted in quite well, so I don't know if that had a negative impact on the game. I think it might have helped us speed wise and shape wise at the time.
Yeah, and Tommy did kind of single out Dylan Kadji to say he was probably the best player, because he kind of played two different roles. And a certain Tyler Cordner came back into the York City lineup, I see, I believe. Is that right?
You might want to edit that out, Will.
Did he not?
No.
Oh. Oh, no, hold on, sorry.
You're looking at the home fixture.
I'm looking at the home fixture. He got a yellow card, apparently.
We also got a point in that game, so if you could change to...
Yeah, where do we go with the kind of defensive situation? I don't think... Is Minoga back for the next game on Saturday? I don't think he is he?
I think there's one more to go.
One more to go. So we've got Harries and Harfield fit. And no other... Well, I guess it's going to be Dylan Kadji in that third space on Saturday. Unless something else happens between now and then. Just to mention that, Rob Worrell on comms said that Lionel John Lewis had basically secured them 4 points with his two goals against us this season, which is a disappointing return of 1 point from a team that are, despite winning, very possibly going down this year.
One thing I would add, Will, is I think we did look just a little bit leggy, and I think the energy that we played with on the preceding Saturday and Tuesday, it looked like that might have just taken a bit out of our edge on Saturday, because those performances were so good, but they were so fast paced. We played at such a speed for 90 minutes. I think perhaps maybe on Saturday there's just a few tired legs, because there's just so many games at this time of year, and I think perhaps Stokes and Tollage and Glover, I think perhaps they just weren't 100% energy wise, but that's just clutching at straws, I think.
Well, I mean, and it may play into the fact that I've forgotten his name. What's going on? Barnett looks such a live wire in that team, is because fresh legs coming on at that time. He's not normally looked like a live wire coming on, because he's coming on when Tolage is still doing it in the 80th minute, and Stokes is going to keep doing it for 90. So maybe that was just one of those games where everyone's a little bit more lethargic. And that does happen against relegation-threatened teams, as we'll find out probably when we play Maidenhead away, which, if a game screams lethargy, it is that game, since the 3-3 and 4-3 games that we had a few years back. Great. So I guess the big elephant in the room is the massive clash at the Rec on Saturday, which is Aldershot against Solihull Moors. Fifth against fourth as we currently stand, and also Altrincham and Gateshead play each other at the same time, so it's quite a weird situation where the four teams that would go into the playoff eliminators at present are playing against each other at 3:00 on Saturday. So great fun if you were kind of... it'd be great if there was a split screen, but there's not. I'm gonna just read out some players to watch out for, which is obviously going to start with Tavon Campbell, who seems to get quite a big mention on the pod, despite not being a shots player now and playing about six games for us last season. He was the replacement for Josh Kelly, who left in January to AFC Wimbledon. Their kind of midfield pairing of Joe Sabara and Callum Maycock, they've played together for like three seasons together at this level, and Solihull have generally for the last three seasons been pretty good. I think last season they were actually quite low down, but they've added Joss Labadie, who's basically League Two through and through for much of his career. And Andy Wing is their manager. He was voted manager of the month in August, which is I was thinking today, it said they were top of the table at the time, so they must be one of the only clubs other than Chesterfield to be top of the league this year, because I think Chesterfield established it pretty quickly. So with all that in mind, I'm going to come to you first, Julian. How are you feeling ahead of Saturday against Solihull, and how important is this game, I guess, both for our playoff chances and it being an important home game, but kind of psychologically with the threat that we might play them home or away, depending on how the season pans out?
Yeah, I think, well, this could be the key game of the last sort of six or seven that we've got left. We're now looking at preferably a home playoff game rather than just to scramble into the playoffs, because, our home form has been superb throughout the whole of the season. So, we're realistically looking for second, third, fourth or fifth, which will give us some home advantage. Now, Solihull have been playing, obviously, really well. They're in fourth place. They have surprised me, to be honest, because I thought when when Josh Kelly left in the January transfer window, I thought that was it. I thought he was the one that was holding them together. But as you pointed out before, with Maycock and Spar in the midfield, you know, they bring experience with them. Callum Maycock, obviously, you know, he was playing for the England C team, so I was able to cast an eye on him, and he does look quality at this level. And it's a game I think we do need to win. I'm just a bit concerned if it ends up as a draw, then that sort of hands the initiative to the other teams, I think. And if Altrincham can perhaps beat Gateshead and we can win, then, you know, with five or six games to go, then we've got a 5 or 6 point gap, which for any team is going to be a really hard one to make up. So I think this is a really important game. If we can win it, it basically tells the rest of the playoff contenders that we're here and we're not messing about. And whether it would strike fear in them, I'm not so sure. It depends what the result is, I guess. But yeah, it would be a real message of intent if we can put Solihull Moors away and get 3 points on Saturday.
Yeah, and this would be a win against them, would be doing the double after we won 1-0 at Solihull earlier in the season, which in my mind was a kind of a turning point where I kind of, I don't know, became a bit whisper it quietly and a bit like, hold on, there's something special happening here. But you didn't want to say that out loud at that time. I'll come to you, Joe. How are you feeling ahead of the game on Saturday? And yeah, do you think it's important both for our chances and psychologically if we might play them again?
Yeah, well, I think as you're saying, Will, if you go back to the Solihull away game back in October, I thought the same as you. I thought, oh, actually, we've got a really good side here, and we might not just be mid-table to potential relegation, which has been the feeling at that time of year for the past few seasons. And I thought it was our best defensive display of recent years, actually, that game away at Solihull. It's a really tough place to go. At the time we played them, they were on a really, really good run, unbeaten in, I can't remember how many, I think it might have been 12 or 13 or something like that. They hadn't lost in ages. And we scored our best team goal of the season, a super cross from Glover, and a great finish from my wonderful Swiss man. So it was, that time was really, really positive. But they, as you mentioned, they've occupied that the top three or four for the whole season. They haven't been moving around. I think they're outside of Chesterfield, one of the most consistent sides. They've never really gone on a long run of defeats. So they've obviously got consistency, and I think they're a team that we need to be really wary of. We gave them a lot of respect in the away fixture, treated the game right, and I don't see Tommy doing anything different on Saturday. He'll take them as the dangerous beasts that they are. And I think, as Julian was saying, it's a game I think we really need to win. Any defeats now start to, you know, give the teams below us a chance to gain ground, because we're still not definitely in the playoffs. I know we've got a bit more of a cushion now, but it's only 4 points. So, you know, if you look at Oldham winning and us losing, it suddenly can drag us back into more of a battle of getting that place. So a win, I think, really starts to secure our place, and a defeat really sends us in the other direction. So you mentioned the players already. They've got a lot of dangerous players of Football League quality. And I think a point would just about be okay, but I think we really need to be winning it. And I'll be there on Saturday, actually. Looking forward to it. I haven't been up to the Rep for a while, not being able to get there. So looking forward to seeing this team, our team at home.
Yeah, lovely stuff. I guess the opportunities for the teams outside the playoffs is big for a weekend like this, where all of those four teams in the playoffs are playing against each other. So Halifax and Oldham have got favourable fixtures and will almost likely, depending on the results, probably be inside the playoffs or on the same level points and on goal difference. So it's going to be an interesting post-match league table, I think. It's quite sad, as you say, like you haven't been down to the Rec for a while, but we've got now three home games left. That's I don't want it to end. I mean, we might get one more. Yeah, we'll probably get one more potentially, and that's it. So potentially we've got four games at home left. The other two are Dorking and Boreham Wood. Julian, how are you feeling about, I don't know, the thought of only three games being left at home and whether we, if we win all three, we'll be in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Will, because I was thinking almost exactly the same. I was thinking, you know, if you can't get to the away games, then you've only got three more Josh Stokes's to look forward to. And that made me quite sad. So we need some more. We need more than three, for sure. We need five and a Wembley final. That's what we're looking for. But with regard to your question, I think we will get to the playoffs if we win all three. Yeah, that would put us on 72. And with the chance of some points from the away games as well, I think we'd get in the top five if we can win all our home games. I think we are a bit reliant on the other teams as to whether we can get into the top three. You know, Bromley, Barnet obviously won against Eastleigh last night. So you could argue they're possibly out of sight now. So, yeah, we are a little bit reliant, I think, on the other teams to continue to not win every game. And then if we can get in the top three, that would be amazing. But, yeah, long answer to your question, Will. I think, yes, if we win all three, we will be in the playoffs.
No worries. Long answers welcomed here. And, yeah, Joe, I'll come to you on that kind of same question. Three home games, it's terrifying. What do you reckon? If we win all three, do we make the playoffs? And how are you feeling about those?
I think Saturdays is the biggest hurdle, I think. I think if we can win that would really, really give us confidence. If we lose it, I think it's going to put pressure on us. So I think the impact of Saturday's result on the mentality and the pressure going into the games is going to be huge. But yeah, I think if we maybe 7 points out of those three home games, I think will probably be enough. Because other teams around us in this league, they'll be beating each other. They'll be dropping points as well. They're under the same pressure as us. You look at a team like Oldham in eighth. The pressure on them is a lot more than it is on us, just because of the size of their fan base, size of their budget. I think we're probably going into it a bit more fearless because no one expected us to be there. So yeah, see what happens there. Although Julian mentioned a minute ago, Eastleigh losing to Barnet. I just had a thought. They've got the top scorer in the division, Eastleigh, and they're not safe from relegation. I haven't done my research, but as a team with the top scorer in the division ever got relegated? He's got 30 goals and they could potentially go down. They're only 3 points clear of the drop zone. Imagine having a player in a team scoring 30 goals and still getting relegated. It'd be funny even more because it's Eastleigh, but yeah, food for thought.
That is a great shout. I kind of want to look it up right now. How am I going to get to that? Wikipedia.
If you want to add in an extra one, Joe, has there ever been a team with a negative goal difference in the playoffs?
And get promoted? I think there is. There must be one. Let's have a let's get
great question. This is what people tune in for.
Minus goal difference, promotion. Come on. Come on, it's got to be. Oh my God, The Guardian in 2017. Here we go. Have any football teams won the league? Oh, okay, won the league's not. Huddersfield were promoted to the Premier League with a negative goal difference, apparently.
Wow.
So was that the time? Was that with Wagner in charge?
Can't be. They won all yeah. their game.
It's really weird, and it's because it says Premier League. That's making me think that's the only time. That I don't know.
Further investigation required.
Yep, I'll add in a little voice note if I can be bothered. Let me just have a quick look over the National League goal scorers since. Right, so we had Langstaff, Mullin, Cheek, Quigley, McCallum Monroe, Cook, which Cook's that? Andy. Ricky Miller, 2017. Dover were good that year, weren't they?
Yeah, they didn't go down when he was top scorer, I don't think.
A certain Dan Holman and Patrick Armand in 2016. Yeah, they're all just screaming good teams. Akinde, Gray, Matt Green, Jamie Vardy, Matt Tubbs. Ooh, Tubbs might be one. 2011, did Salisbury get... Was it Salisbury, was that?
He was at Crawley at one stage.
Crawley. Oh, so they wouldn't have got, they didn't get relegated, did they? Oh, well, that was a brief sojourn to look at the top goal scorers. It doesn't look like anyone's been top goal scorer and got relegated, but let's hope that Eastleigh do get relegated. That would make my season.
Please do tweet or email the podcast if you can find a top scorer in any division who has then been relegated.
And apologies to the fans that are listening.
Or not, as the case may be now. Our resident interviewer, or first interviewer, Julian, went down to the England Sea down at Llanelli Town. How was your experience down there?
Well, I absolutely loved it. I was playing journalist for the day, and you know, from start to finish, it was a really enjoyable evening. It's just really good to be around the players, you know, see what's going on behind the scenes. And the whole setup from start to finish was really professional by the FA of Wales. The weather could have been better. Typical West Wales weather. It was a bit blustering and very rainy. I was talking to Gus Scott Morris after the game as well, and he was saying that the pitch was really difficult to play on. Llanelli Town play in the South Welsh League, so it's the league below the Premier. So he was saying that the pitch isn't quite as good as what they're used to, and they did find it a little bit hard. But no, the whole thing was great. I was able to watch the game from a brilliant viewpoint, obviously see Ollie Harfield in action, and also, as I hinted before, I was able to look at all the players and just, you know, get a really good idea of what they're at. Also met the assistant manager of Sutton United, who was there. He was running his thoughts over the players. And again, interesting to speak to him, because he was talking about, you know, plan A if we stay in the Football League, plan B if we drop down. So, you know, lots of things that these teams are thinking about, which sometimes we don't think of as just general supporters. But, you know, the fact that he had come over from Sutton and he was going back there the same evening, you know, meant that, you know, they really are serious again about, you know, whichever division they end up in. So really enjoyable. And as you'll hear a bit later, I was able to interview Rob Worrell and Joe Pope as well, and also to spend a bit of time with Ollie Harfield as well. So I'll let everyone listen to that, which is coming up a little bit later.
Yeah. Hi, Will. Thanks very much. I'm here this evening at Stebbenheath Park, the home of Llanelli Town from the Welsh Southern Premier League. And I'm here today covering the England Sea versus Wales Sea match kicking off at 7:45 tonight. Now, with regard to this match, it's a really interesting lineup. The manager, Paul Fairclough, has named his 16-man England squad. And now, in previous editions, the fixture was limited to players just under the age of 23. But for the last three matches, they've named an open age group. So no one club has more than one player included. And there is also representation from the National League North and South too. So the National League's top scorer, Paul McCallum, is included this evening, having scored 29 goals in 31 games. And Aldershot supporters from a little older persuasion will remember him when he came to us on loan. And representing the National League North, we've got Will Stanway, who plays in goal for Chester. He's a 22-year-old, has kept 16 clean sheets in 37 games this term and is extremely highly rated. And in the National League South, is represented by Ollie Pearce, who has been in top form for Worthing this season. He is the runaway top goal scorer in the division. He's got 33 goals. And that's 13 more than his nearest rivals. Now, England have also named 10 players on standby should there be any amendments for tonight. But I'll quickly run through the 16 players chosen. So in goal, we've got Grant Smith of Bromley, Will Stanway of Chester. Then in defence, we've got Gus Scott Morris of Southend, our own Ollie Harfield, Tom Eastman of Dagenham and Jamie Grimes of Chesterfield. We've also got Miles Kenlock of Ebbsfleet United, Isaac Marriott of Altrincham, Ed Francis from Gateshead, Rhys Smith from Maidenhead, Dan Pybus from York, apologies, from Dorking, and Callum Stead from Barnet. And completing the 16-man squad tonight is Emmanuel Deseru from Hartlepool, Ollie Pearce and Paul McCallum, as mentioned, and Callum Maycock from Solihull Moors. Now, this evening, I'm hoping to grab a few words with Rob Worrell, who, as we all know, covers the Aldershot games on the BBC commentary. Hoping to grab a few words, just finding out from him what his thoughts are on today's game, any thoughts that he can give us on Aldershot so far this season as well. And he is joined here this evening by Joe Pope, and the two of them run the National League podcast on a weekly basis, which can be found on any good podcast operators. So that's it for now. Will, I will come back to you a bit later with a quick word with Rob and a quick full match report too. So I'm here with Rob and Joe, and be really interested to hear your thoughts on tonight's match and what you're expecting to see. Rob?
Well, the first thing I notice is that we've got some adverse weather, which reminds me horribly of 2 years ago when England C went up to Carmarthen or Bangor and frankly got a pasting. They got beaten 4-0 by, it was men against boys. And the frightening thing about that was, on paper, England C had a pretty strong looking side that day, but it wasn't to be then. However, last year, when perhaps the side didn't look as strong, it got a 1-0 win against Alti. And of course, our very own Tyler Cordner at the time was captain. And also got a man of the match performance as England kind of slugged it out and got the win.
Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, well, obviously Wales lost last year, so I'm expecting them to come out and try to win this year, get their own back. Obviously, the England team changes quite a bit, but the Wales team has been fairly settled the last couple of years. They've made a couple of changes this year to that team, so I expect that they'll try and make up that gap from last year. And I expect a tough game, as Rob said, inclement weather, and it's like a very soft pitch, shall we say.
The team, the last 16 that they've picked is not age-related this time, is it? It's more of a sort of one person per club. Do you think that makes for a better game?
Yeah, hopefully. I think, obviously, with the restrictions in terms of the timing of the season, the fact that there's one person per club, that's just the way that they've had to do it. But it's, as we saw last year, one player per club, it kind of galvanised everybody. And yeah, hopefully that it pays dividends tonight.
And Rob, who are you particularly looking forward to seeing tonight?
Well, obviously Ollie Harfield, both because he's a smashing bloke, because he plays for Aldershot, and because he's had a fantastic season and has played every minute of every game for Aldershot Town. So I'm really pleased for him. I would imagine that there would have been some consideration. He got the nod, but I would have thought also that maybe potentially Ryan Glover and Tyler Frost. And in fact, I know they were all kind of considered. But looking at what they've got, what they gave themselves with Ollie, thanks to Tommy's foresight, really, is that they could play him left centre-back, left back in a four, or left wing-back. We're fairly close to kick-off, and this podcast won't go out until afterwards, so I think we're privy to information that he will play on as left-back in a back four, at least to start with. And inside of him will be Miles Kenlock, who played with him an Aldershot towards the end of last season.
Fantastic. So just before kick-off, what are our predictions for tonight's game, Joe?
Well, I've got to back England, and I think Paul McCallum might be the difference. I have seen him live once this year, and he scored a hat-trick. So I hope he does the same again. I'll go 2 on England.
And Rob?
It's a really good point you make about Paul McCallum. We watched the set-piece training earlier on today, and it's game day. They're doing walkthroughs. They're doing set-pieces. It's not the most dynamic. But what Joe and I noticed, he's a ball magnet. Absolutely knows where to be. He was the only one that finished a couple of times in the set-piece training. It's literally like picking cherries off a tree for him, as it has been this season, 34 goals. I'd definitely back him to score. I have no idea really on the score. And when I have no idea, I normally go for a Desmond, a 2-2.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys, for that. And I'll hopefully catch you for a couple of minutes after the game. Yes, so welcome back to a rather rainy, drizzly West Wales, where it's finished 1-0 to Wales C. Probably a draw seemed a fair result But the match was settled by an excellent free kick from 25 yards from Sean Bradley of Carnarvon Town just before half-time. Now, England pressed hard in the second half and could have dramatically equalised at the death through Ollie Pearce, but was denied by a superb save from the Welsh goalkeeper low down to his right. Our own Ollie Harfield was absolutely magnificent tonight, playing the entire 90 minutes in an old-fashioned left-back role, and I was lucky enough to grab Ollie after the presentation of his England cap to catch his thoughts on his England debut. So I'm here with Ollie Harfield. Ollie, be good to just hear your thoughts on your debut for England.
Yeah, first of all, obviously I'm delighted to get the call up, and you know it was a pleasure to represent England C at international level. Disappointing result. It was a tough game, but yeah, I'm over the moon to be here, to be honest.
And tell me about your own performance. How do you feel you did?
Yeah, I thought I'd done well. I gave the ball away once, but I managed to win it back. They were quite a high-pressing team, so you know, for my club, I'm bombing on down the wing, but I was quite pushed back today. But I thought I gave a solid performance and a good account of myself today.
So, slightly different role today, more of a back four as opposed to a back three. Did that feel different in any way, or were you able to adapt quite easily?
Yeah, it took me 10 minutes or so, because obviously with Aldershot, I've been left-sided of a back three, and it really suits me. But I can also play left-back, and although it's not as attacking, but I did enjoy it out there today.
Fantastic. Ollie, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it, and good luck for the rest of the season.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Just coming in here to give you a little update. Apologies if there's some background noise. On the midweek results in the National League. So on Tuesday we had Barnet against Eastleigh. Barnet won 2-1. Gorman and Odonkor and Maguire got a goal back for Eastleigh, but they're now 3 points off the drop. There was obviously no Paul McCallum, as we've just heard from Julian. And then a big result on Wednesday night was Halifax beating Chesterfield 4-2. They struck two in 2 minutes to go 3-1 up just before half time. I messaged Joe to say that'll be 4-3 Chesterfield, but champagne is on ice. Chesterfield still not got promoted for definite. They had a chance on Saturday and a chance tonight and weren't able to get through it. And in the other game, the inevitable 1-0 win for Bromley despite going down to 10 men in the 17th minute, that man Michael Cheek. So the table is slightly different, and it slightly annoyingly makes the Gateshead Altrincham 6th vs. 7th conundrum not work anymore, because Halifax are now 6th on 62 points, just 1 point behind Aldershot, and with obviously a 7 better goal difference, a big move. So Gateshead are now pushed out of the playoffs for the moment, but they have a game in hand, and if they win that, they will be above Aldershot on goal difference, because they have plus 18, which is absolutely wild. So anyway, now we're going to talk about the league table, which is slightly out of date now, but just remember these things I've just told you. Cheers. Right, so let's see the game on Saturday and any midweek results, which I will voice over in a second. We'll see how the table looked on Saturday. So Aldershot back on minus goal difference, minus one from that game, on 63 points and in fifth place. Going to be playing Solihull in fourth on Saturday, who are on 65 points. And then it's Altrincham and Gateshead, as I said, they're playing each other at the weekend. And then Oldham and Halifax, 59 points for the both of them. Halifax have a game in hand, which they're playing in this midweek, so I will let you know how they get on and whether they are right behind us in sixth or still in ninth. I'm going to come to you first, Joe. How are you feeling about the table? Any changes that you've seen in the week? I know we've obviously mentioned Eastleigh there as potential relegation candidates. They're now just 3 points off the drop, so it's again very exciting. Very exciting league, to be honest, the bottom half and probably just the top nine now towards the playoffs.
Yeah, it's as I mentioned, Eastleigh, it's there's often a team that can look like they might be comfortable get picking up results, looking like they should be a mid-table side. When we played them, I didn't think they were bad. I thought they were pretty, pretty good side. I didn't look like a playoff side, but I thought they had enough firepower to certainly keep them up. And the fact they've been dragged into it is just it's a little bit funny because I don't like Eastleigh, as I said. But you've got teams down there that we're playing in the next couple of weeks. You've got Boreham Wood, and you've got Dorking Wanderers. So those games we have against them are going to be huge for us and huge for them. I'm a little bit surprised Kidderminster are still in there. I thought they were going to climb out. They really hit the ground running when they had Phil Brown take over. They haven't been getting thrashed by anyone, but they just had a few too many draws in the last few weeks. So they're sort of keeping themselves nearly climbing out the relegation zone. They might be that sort of last day of the season survival story. We'll see how it goes. But there's a few teams that picked up as well, like Fylde had a good little run, but they're dropping back into it. But still, any team from, I think, Hartlepool down could still get relegated. And yeah, I wouldn't be, I really wouldn't want to predict, say, a bottom four. I can predict bottom, I think, but other than that, it's
You're
anybody's game.
joking. What odds are you getting for her? What odds are you getting for them? Tommy mentioned in his post-match interview at York that that Dagenham and Redbridge is the only team we're going to play for the rest of the season that are not fighting for something. To be honest, looking at it, it probably is true. But that does basically rule out 21 teams. That 21 teams are fighting for something at the moment. And as you say, all the way up to Hartlepool, which encompasses Woking and Ebbsfleet, who have been on good runs. They've won four out of the last five each. However, having a good run now is not the same as having two defeats in a row over Easter and then looking over your shoulder again. I'll come to you next, Julian. How are you seeing the kind of the league? And I guess the playoffs not really changed much, but relegation battle's nice to look down on, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier on that the importance of us winning on Saturday really puts us in a prime position and sends out a message of intent. And I think it would really solidify our position in the playoffs. Obviously hoping for some favours from some of the other teams that are playing, and Joe alluded to it earlier on. There's still a lot of teams that have got to play each other, so there's going to be points that are dropped. Just looking at the bottom of the table, I think from memory, I called out around about Christmas time that two teams I thought would get dragged down there would be Boreham Wood and Dorking, and they're both in the bottom five. If you look at Boreham Wood's form at the moment, they're not picking up as many points as they would like. And I think what you'll find with most of the managers in any league is that they don't tend to look at the league table, but they tend to look at the form table, because that's obviously what's happening at the moment. There's no point in looking at Chesterfield's form in October or November, because it's got nothing to do with what's happening now. So, if you're looking at the form table, then Kiddy have only lost one in five. So that's form is going to get them out of the bottom four if they continue that. Boreham would have only won one in five. Eastleigh have only won one in five as well. So, if you're looking for teams that are going to struggle and are going to continue to struggle, then you could argue that Eastleigh and Boreham Wood are really going to be nervous at the moment. But like you both said, it's impossible at the moment to tell what the bottom four is going to look like. And you just look at Woking 3 weeks ago, they were 4 points adrift and now they're in 14th. So, anybody has the ability to get themselves out of it and get themselves into mid-table. The only problem is that the games are now running out. Woking did make their move, with still 10 games to go. But the games are running out now. So, these teams have got to do something pretty quick to get themselves sorted. But if I was a betting man, all right, I'm going to go for my bottom four, and we'll see if it holds any water. So Oxford City will go down, Boreham Wood will go down, York City will go down, and I think the last place is going to be Maidenhead. There you go. You heard it here first.
Fair play. And we're going to obviously have, we're probably going to have to beat those two teams that you put in there, Dorking and Boreham Wood, in our home games. That'll probably seal their fate. Oh no, sorry, Maidenhead is what you said. We got them away over on the Good Friday. Yeah, and it's also worth, I guess, mentioning Wealdstone, who are playing as we record. They've just kicked off. Little glimpse behind the curtain there. So they've only played 35 games compared to most other teams, 39. They were, I'm not sure what the word they used, but demanded by the National League to play this game this week, despite them having five international call-ups, which normally gets you the game postponed or you move it back a week. The options are running out. So if there's any inclement weather incoming, Wealdstone might struggle to get all their games in as it stands. They're currently in 16th on 46 points, but only 3 points above the drop, and they're playing against Bromley. And you'll have known because I've voiceovered what that result is. And yeah, the only other thing I was going to mention is how close the goal difference is looking. And what one bad result really throws you in there. Dorking are on minus 20. That's the worst one. Kidderminster on minus 13, so that's a bit of a gap. Then you've got minus 17, and then minus 13, minus 13, minus 14. So there could be a potential for a nice last day goal difference swing to look out for. Grand. So that we'll park the league table. It might look slightly different, but Aldershot will remain fifth for this weekend. Any other business? Is the news that Dejan Tetic is out for the remainder of the season, and we have signed Jonathan Page in central midfield. He was at Farnborough last year, played 44 times, and was apparently kind of on our radar to be signed over summer, but picked up another injury. So, yeah, I'll come to you first, Joe. What are your thoughts on the loss of Tetic and the signing of Page?
Yeah, I don't think we've actually spoke much about the loss of Tetic, really. And I think he was so good, playing so well, and was quite pivotal to the upturn in performances, particularly in midfield. And it's just a real shame that he got crocked at a crucial time. By the looks of Jonathan Page, he looks like a good, skillful player on the ball. Had a little look at some clips of him on YouTube earlier. And I don't know loads about him, but I just trust our recruitment at the moment. Very few players this season we've signed haven't paid off. I suppose you could perhaps look at Joe Haig. It didn't quite work out. So it'd be interesting to see. But this is another young player who wants, by the looks of it, wants to prove himself. And I think it's the perfect team at the moment to do that. And I imagine if he signs on, shows good promise, He might be a mainstay next season as we start to, you know, we lose our star man in midfield. We're going to be looking for that replacement.
Yeah, and he may be needed ASAP, potentially, if Kadji's to drop into the defence. So I'm not sure how fit he is, if he's match fit. He can't be match fit, but he might need to get up to speed pretty quickly with us. And what are your thoughts on the signing, Julian, and losing Tetic for what seems to be the remainder of the season?
Yeah, I'm really, really disappointed with that, because I thought Tetic was the reason that we really upped our form, particularly after the Bromley game. I thought he was superb in that. And we just seemed to kick on a level when he started to play on a regular basis. So that's really disappointing. Having said that, it's not an area of the pitch which concerns me as much as perhaps the defence at the moment. You know, we do have some options to replace Tetic, and the signing of Jonathan Page, you know, he's been training with us for a couple of weeks now, and you know, the signs are that he's fitted into the group of players really well, and that it sounds like he is going to be available for the remaining games. So yeah, really pleased that move's been made. It may have been made on the basis of Kadji moving back into defence, into the back three as well, which would obviously leave that space in midfield. So, and the Farnborough supporters generally thought very highly of him too for his performances last year. So it's a good sign. I think it's a good signing and just what we need. And it's really... it feels so different this year from last year, because we couldn't sign a player for love nor money last year. And now every time we need something, we just seem to get it. So that must be the Tommy Witherington effect, I guess, you know, and probably the cup run as well. But it's just really great that when we have an issue and we have a problem, that he's able to solve it really quickly. So, yeah, definitely a risk worth taking. It's only been signed on to the end of the season, so definitely a good move, that one.
Yeah, great. It seems to be that a problem arises and Tommy just kind of gets out his Rolodex of contacts or a recruitment spreadsheet and just picks a player. I reckon just maybe just sticks it on random and just they know it's going to prop up a player that can slot in. And so far, I mean, that central midfield position has been slotted in. Dejan Tetek slotted in very easily. Glover has played there. Frost has played there. I mean, it's just all good stuff, isn't it?
Talking of recruitment, Will, at the England C match last night, Ollie Pearce came on from Worthing. He has, and you'll hear it in my sort of pre-match commentary, he's smashed in over 30 goals this season in the National League South. And he was superb, absolutely superb. And if we have got a direct link into Jamie Hedges, then you know, we need to tell him that Ollie Pearce, and I'm sure he's on the radar already, but he looked really good and would be a great replacement for, dare I say, if Tollard does leave us in the summer, he would be a great replacement.
Yeah, I'm sure he's on the radar, especially if they fail to get promoted. Not sure where they sit at the moment. I think they're in that...
I think they're top.
No, they're perfect. Fifth. They're fifth. They've only won one of the last five. So they are currently in the same position as us, really, with two more points. And
just while you're speaking, Will, when you're looking at the National League South table, I've got to give my my weekly shout out to Truro City's fixture list. They play 33 games now, and they've got 13 more to go. They started getting a few games in, but actually last night's game was abandoned due to a serious injury when they did actually get a game on. Well,
wow.
Not when I say at home, they got their game on in Taunton. Although they were at Gloucester the other week, so you know they're edging closer back to Truro. They'll pass my house soon, I think, for a home fixture. But yeah, just looking at their fixtures, they've got to play. I think every sort of three or four days for the next 23rd, 26th, 29th, 1st of April, 6th, 9th, 11th, 13th, 16th, 20th of April, and then fit in their rearranged cancellation from last night.
That's wild. It's two leagues away from the Football League, and this is happening. This is something you'd get on Parks Football.
I think tonight, Will, it's one of those nights where we keep coming up with these really weird questions. So you know, you mentioned earlier on that Will's only got five international players. Yeah, when was the last time a team with five international call-ups got relegated? Could be a question for the National League. Joe's just thrown in one there. There's randomness coming all directions.
Yeah, and my last, well, it's not a question, but Farnborough have won the last four games and are only 6 points off the playoffs. Joe Haig is a machine. He's been back. Yeah, he's bagging a few goals. So interesting to see if Farnborough keep that up, go into the playoffs in good nick, which is always good. Always good.
About the National League South again, I was talking to a Torquay supporter yesterday, and they're really concerned. They've had 10 points deducted. They're now only, I think, 3 points off the relegation places, and they're losing for fun at the moment. So, Torquay a year ago, I was worried that Torquay were going to overtake us because they were on a superb run of form towards the end of the season. But, Joe, what's the viewpoint down west of Torquay at the moment?
I think, yeah, like you say, there's a lot of worry. A couple of close friends of mine are Torquay fans, and I think that point deduction was just like punching someone on the face when they're already down. It was just... it's the last thing they needed. I mean, obviously there's the reasons why they've had that deduction, but there is an outpouring of love in Torquay at the moment for the club, though. They really are rallying to try and get the finances, but the debts are, the deficit needed to make up the funds is huge. So you know, collecting money at games, getting some gate receipts is all well and good, but there's so much money to make, and I just hope the worst doesn't happen to them. But if they drop down another league, I suppose if they do drop down another league, they probably wouldn't be professional, and perhaps that could cut a lot of the costs and gives them a little bit of chance to rebuild. But to drop down to the league below the National South, it'd be bonkers, a team of that size playing in that league. I just hope and pray that they survive.
Yes, yeah, let's hope so. Hope so for their sake. There's kind of, it seems to be a rolling update of people pledging their interest to Torquay, and obviously while we are Aldershot fans, what is going on at Reading is also absolutely blowing my mind every single day. So yeah, I don't even know where it's at the moment with their training ground, but at one point this week or last, it was being sold to Wycombe Wanderers. It's too much to go into right now, but yeah, absolutely mad. And then just a little National League North, Tamworth will be in the league next year, I'm almost certain. I think they won't be able to win the league this weekend, but with their next game, if they win that as well, then they'll be promoted as champions. And Yeovil are only 7 points clear, to be honest, which has surprised me, because I thought they were running away with it a bit further than that. And in our league, Chesterfield are obviously about a game away, maybe, from winning the league. So there's all the updates. Oh, and Colchester United are in the relegation zone, which potential big game that if they come down. Great. Well, that's all the tables done. thank you, Joe. Thank you, Julian, for coming on.